on my site, jrnyquist.com, I get mail, and one of my readers wrote about this Vreeland case, and I perused it, and it didn't interest me, but somebody said I should check out this interview that Vreeland did on the Alex Jones Show on February 6th. So I went and listened to it. It was on the Alex Jones website. They had an archived past broadcast.
Okay, we're in Toronto, Canada. So I wonder if you might just explain to us who Alex Jones is, because I suspect many people in our audience have no idea.
Alex Jones is a right wing conspiracy theory type radio broadcaster. You know, he believes that the Illuminati and the Satanists, Satan worshiper type people, are running the world elite, the global elite, through all the banks. And so it's kind of hairy stuff that he broadcasts. He got Vreeland on because Jones's shtick is that the Bush and the cabal knew about 911 in advance, and Vreeland was supposedly hinting that this was indeed the case, that there was advanced knowledge. But what Vreeland did when he got on the show, in the Alex Jones Show, is he said that he had these Russian documents that indicated, when he read them, Russian involvement behind Iraqi involvement in the creation of Red Mercury devices that were to be used in the United States after their friends of Al-Qaeda did the 911 attack. And this kind of piqued my interest, because I had run across fragmentary things along these lines and thought, well, maybe there is something to this. So I contacted the fellow that had gotten Vreeland on the Alex Jones Show, whose name escapes me now, to have Vreeland call me. And Vreeland did indeed call me, and we had a nice chat. And it was very interesting, because, you know, when you first talk to Vreeland, you have a hard time making up your mind whether or not he's making it up or not.
And we should also mention here that he was doing all this from jail. This communication that he was, at least the Alex Jones Show,
he
was in jail. I don't know about your conversation with him over the phone, whether he'd been released.
Yeah, he'd been released, because I talked to him like in mid-March, right after his release. He'd just been released a matter of a couple weeks when I talked to him.
March 15th was the date of his release.
Okay, it would be late March then that I talked to him. The one thing that I noted, that his bearing in his conversation is not that of a military officer. I mean, I attended Quantico, which is Marine Corps Officer Candidate School, is the same place that naval officers who don't go to Annapolis go. And I even asked him about Quantico, and he refused to talk about it, because obviously, having been there myself, I could determine quickly whether he'd had any naval officer training.
Is there some reason, do you think, other than whatever your suspicions were, and I'll let you say that for yourself, but do you think there was any other possibility?
Well, what intrigued me was the information that he had. It was obvious for me in talking to him that he knew almost nothing about international politics, and that his political knowledge was quite flimsy. It was something that you would expect from a high school senior or college sophomore who hadn't done much reading. But yet he talked about some of these technical things in a very convincing way, as if he had seen documents or he'd talked to someone who had. And that got my curiosity up, and I thought that, you know, the spy game employs all kinds of people. And so I looked at it. I gave it a chance. And, of course, what I found out later was that when looking over his legal brief, is that there's something much different here than he at least claims.
What do you mean?
Well, for example, in his own affidavit presented to the Canadian court, he admits that basically that he went to Moscow to meet with Russian security agents, and that he passed documents in Canada to Russian Secret Service officials, Russian intelligence officers. And now he claims that the documents were fake documents that he passed them, but he admits to passing them documents.
What he's called in his interviews the dummy bags.
Right. Now, this is extraordinary. And he admits in the affidavit that among the first people he attempted to contact, that he did contact upon being arrested, was the Russian embassy in Canada. Now, this is something that an American agent doesn't do, but it's something that a panicked Russian agent might do.
Where did you get that affidavit?
I got a copy of it from the American Freedom News in Granbury, Texas, which are the people that put me in touch with him. They had gotten it directly from him, and it's just a straight copy from, you know, from his lawyers, and it has all the legal briefs and everything. And it's, you know, it's got other legal papers associated with the case.
Is there any chance that the material that he sent to you was actually never submitted in the court?
No. No, because I talked to other people who had the complete legal files, and they confirmed that the contents were the same. And other people who read the documents, you know, confirmed it. It's also full of legalese, of course, but... no, it's what's interesting is that these admissions are all inconsistent with his story of being a U.S. intelligence, you know, Office of Naval Intelligence agent.
You started to seriously in a journalistic fashion started to examine some of the details of the story.
There's two other curious things about Vreeland's story. One is that Vreeland claims to have stolen documents from. Or gotten stolen documents from Russia, which he then was supposedly to pass to a Russian agent in Canada. But he knows, his knowledge is all about American secrets and American technology. He doesn't seem to know much about Russian agents or Russian technology. And the other thing is that the Canadian embassy official who died, Mark Bastian, there was one story in... I think it was the Toronto Star that said he had been poisoned by clozapine.
That is correct.
And that was like 6 days after Vreeland was arrested in Canada. Now, what's intriguing is that who killed Mark Bastian and why? Well, you have an American in Canada being arrested after traveling to Moscow who admits to passing documents to a Russian security official 6 days after, who immediately calls the Russian embassy, and then 6 days later Bastian is dead. Now, you can draw certain conclusions from that. You can't draw firm conclusions. You can speculate about it, but it's very intriguing, and it raises questions which, of course, we can't answer because we don't have security clearances and we don't have all the information. But it paints a very different picture of Vreeland if you just look at the bare facts, then what he then attempts to create in the aftermath.
Did you at any time look into details of what Mr. Vreeland calls disinformation, but appears to us lay people as news articles that have appeared about him in the past?
Well, what was interesting is that I did an article that mentioned him, and then when I talked to him in greater depth, and then I got into checking out whether Red Mercury was the actual possibility, and I talked to Sam Cohen, the father of the neutron bomb, about it. But in that process of writing the two articles, I was contacted by Vreeland's brother, Terry, who said, you know, my brother's been a petty crook his whole life, is what Terry's claim is. And Terry passed me his Vreeland's, basically his criminal rap sheet, which is quite extensive. He's wanted in like 6 states here in the U.S. And
what kind of documentation did he have to support those allegations?
Police reports, phone numbers of arresting officers, things of that nature.
And
different places where he's wanted and the different charges that he'd been put up on.
And I know from speaking to you earlier that you're very confident that this is the same person that even Delmar Vreeland on his website has admitted.
There's no doubt, because I talked to two people immediately in touch with Vreeland, who went and talked to Vreeland right after I talked to him, and then I got back to them to find out what Vreeland said about what his brother had told me. And Vreeland never denied that this was his brother, in fact admitted that this was his brother saying these things about him, and just came up with an explanation for why his brother's saying this, and the explanation had to do with that his brother's, let me see if I can remember the explanation, that his brother's wife's uncle or father is some kind of mobster in Detroit, and that somehow explains why his brother's trying to discredit him.
You know that there's somebody who says that they're Terry Woodbury, or Terry Weems, in fact, is the name that they used. Is this the same person?
Yes. Well, this is his half-brother.
Right, but he's known by two different last names.
Yeah, because he was part of a musical band, and because their mother had different husbands, and so there were different last names associated in their growing up.
So is Freeland's stepfather the father of Woodbury or Weems?
Yes, one of them. Yeah, I believe that there's a different one now.
Okay.
Yeah. So because their mother had multiple husbands.
Do you want to give us any of the details of the criminal records? Any information about specific charges or allegations that were made? Nothing that's not part of the record, I guess.
Things like identity theft, fraud, mainly things of that nature. Charging up people's credit cards, buying things, writing bad checks. I can't remember the specifics now because it's been a month since I went over the details, and it's a little bit blurry, but it was mainly that sort of thing. And, of course, if you can get Terry on the line and have him tell you, of course, you might hear more than you want to hear about it. Those are the sort of things. Now, of course, Vreeland explains this is part of his cover. And I asked Terry, I said, is it possible your brother was, this was cover, that your brother was in naval intelligence in some kind of a thing? And he didn't think so, because he says he was too busy getting in trouble with the law to do anything else than what he was doing. And, it's interesting, in his legal brief, Vreeland makes a big deal about the fact that he was in the United States Navy, which he was, and that he couldn't have been in the United States Navy if he'd had a prior criminal record, which is what his criminal record in the U.S. says, and therefore the criminal record is some kind of U.S. government fabrication. But what his brother Terry told me was that he used Terry's Social Security number to join the Navy.
So you think he's alluded?
And apparently that's the case. So if you look at his military file.
All right, now about the military file. Michael Rupert says that it is impossible for him to have a 1,200-page military file after only being in the military or in the Navy for, we believe, 6 or 8 months or something.
That's what the military alleges.
Well, Rupert is claiming that there's this many pages, but he doesn't actually have that many pages. He just has the claim that there's these numbers on the pages and that certain numbers are missing. But if you've ever been in the United States military, you would understand that all kinds of really strange things are possible in terms of documentation that don't make any sense. When you join the military, for example, you have all kinds of medical examinations and shots, and all kinds of paperwork is done on you, and it's all sort of automatic. And, I'd have to actually see all of the papers, to satisfy myself that what Rupert's saying is true, because I got to be honest, I got slammed by Rupert and by Vreeland for just telling the truth about what Vreeland told me. Vreeland lied to me, and then Rupert made it out like I had done some kind of dirty yellow journalism with Vreeland when I expressed skepticism about what Vreeland had told me, that evidently I had gotten everything wrong. But the fact is that inconsistencies in Vreeland's story showed up. I expressed skepticism in the second article, and then all of a sudden I was some kind of a bad, evil person. And, none of these people knew things about, Rupert knew things about Vreeland that he knew that Vreeland couldn't be on the level. And he didn't say anything about it, and other people I talked to didn't say anything about it, which disappointed me.
We are going to be playing an interview that we did recently with Michael Rupert a little later on tonight. But
and it led to Rupert allegedly phoning Vreeland to warn him about us.
Oh, that's very... You know, every time I talk to...
And we didn't...
I talked to Linda Fanton at the Green Party, and I talked to this fellow from... that sent me the legal documents from the Granbury, Texas, the American Freedom News. Every time I talked to him, they'd get on the phone, you know, with somebody that had talked to Vreeland, and then immediately there would be, you know, a correction, a course correction, and a new thing. And so that the truth was always morphing. And the thing that disappointed me about Rupert was that Vreeland had put out this document that he claimed to have had from Russia, which indicated that Putin and the Iraqis were involved behind the events of 9/11 and involved with Red Mercury.
And you have part of this printed on your website, correct?
Yes.
Yeah, I read part of
and,
it there.
And, you know, it's I believe that it's a fabrication, but what's interesting is that when this document was first mentioned on the Alex Jones show on February 6th, I was told that Rupert called up Alex Jones and called up the American Freedom News and said, don't give any publicity to this. And he gave some convoluted explanation for why it was not something they wanted to delve into. And, in other words, attempting to suppress it for some reason.
And it should be also mentioned that during the Rents interview, Vreeland starts talking about the note. Mm-hmm. And Rupert says, oh, this has come as a big surprise to me that you're saying this, because
it's
something
not a big
different.
Surprise to him, because he was trying to warn off other journalists from getting Vreeland to talk about it on the 6th. This got my curiosity, because here you have a document that points to Russia as the bad guy, not America. And, of course, Rupert's hobby horse is to bash America for everything that happens in the world. And so this just didn't fit with Rupert's worldview, so he was going to, you know, try to get it all edited, to get it all changed, and to get everybody off of it. Now, Vreeland was probably making it up, who knows, or maybe he picked it up from somebody in Moscow or some criminal he was in jail with. But whatever the case, it's fascinating to me, and it gives me no faith in anything that Rupert says.
Do you believe that Vreeland was in Moscow? Is there anything to suggest that he was there?
Well, what's interesting is that if you listen to the tapes that American Freedom News had, extensive tapes, and I had access to all of the tapes, which were not broadcast, of conversations that Vreeland gave with them, is that he knows streets and places in Moscow.
That is evident from the interviews we've heard.
Yeah, he's been in Moscow. I mean, he could be making it up, but I would... First of all, he also talks about going to Moscow in his affidavit, and that's something the Canadian government would easily be able to disprove, and of course, you don't want to commit a felony in your affidavit by perjuring yourself. So when he talks about facts that can be easily verified in his affidavit, for example, passing something to the Russians, meeting with Russians in Moscow, things like this, and he's got to be very careful that he's stating something, because he doesn't know if he wasn't followed, and he doesn't know if there is an extensive paper trail on these things.
You had a previous interest in Red Mercury connected to some other people you were talking to on the subject. You want to talk a bit about that?
Yeah, of course, we're under a terrorist threat. And, of course, just in the last 2 days, they've been talking about nuclear threat against the U.S. and other Western targets. And, of course, I knew that Sam Cohen had been talking a long time, Sam Cohen, the inventor of the neutron bomb, who's now retired, living in Los Angeles, that Red Mercury was real, and that you could make a bomb that was many times more powerful than what we have in our current hydrogen bombs, and much smaller, much more miniaturized. And this intrigued me as a possibility, because he believed the Russians had developed it. And when I talked to him, he said that he had evidence he'd heard through sources that the Iraqis had been experimenting with red mercury and had been in some kind of a deal with the Russians. And so this is very interesting, because, of course, in Saddam Hussein's nuclear program, the big problem for him is to get fissionable material to make an ordinary nuclear device. But if he could get red mercury, he could make something that's actually easier to make if he has the red mercury.
Did he tell you anything that you didn't already know about red mercury?
Well, his assertion was that what they'd made was a 2-megaton red mercury device. That was interesting because my understanding is that red mercury makes a small tactical nuclear device that is not really practical as a larger device. And my interest in then talking to Cohen later was whether you could make a 2-megaton mercury device. And he said, yes, you could make a miniaturized red mercury 2-megaton device, but it would have to be multi-stage device, which means more than one device inside of a device. And that was intriguing, too. And I wanted to know how small such a device could be, but Cohen was unable to say whether a softball-sized bomb was possible.
So how does Delmart Vreeland, a person who you believe has a criminal history and he's been occupied with committing crimes in jail most of his life, how does he find out about red mercury?
Well, it's interesting. What people have to understand is that the criminal world and the terrorist world, they're merged. And that Vreeland is someone in the criminal underworld who had association undoubtedly with Cuban and probably Russian criminals. Well, he admits that he's had run-ins with the Russian mafia. The Russian mafia is largely united with the Russian intelligence services and the Russian General Staff, Main Intelligence Directorate. And so therefore, talk or bragging about different capabilities and terrorist capabilities would be common in those circles. Now, what he would hear would not necessarily be accurate, but it would be indicative of a sort of a mindset and the sort of things you heard. I mean, if you go down and talk to drug and gun runners down in Mexico who are buddies with the Cuban intelligence service, you'll hear things about poisoning our water supplies and you know, causing all the people in the U.S. to come down with a disease that'll kill us all. You know, you'll hear things like that. And so he picked up some of this stuff from Russian mafia people up in Detroit or Canada, wherever.
Before we let you go, I want to know if there is anything else that you'd like to say on the subject of Delmart Vreeland.
Well, I mean, that's basically all we know. We know that, you know, he has a criminal record in the United States. His brother thinks that he's pulling a scam. And his own affidavit in court does not bear with what he has told people in his explanations of his career as a supposed Office of Naval Intelligence officer.
Can you just tell me why you're saying that Vreeland's demeanor is not proper?
In the U.S. military, as an officer, you are trained to say yes, sir, no, sir, yes, ma'am, no, sir. You're trained to, in leadership, in order to gain respect in the military, you show respect to others. And Vreeland is a very insulting, arrogant manner when he communicates. And this comes, he sort of has a kind of cynical way of expressing everything. And it's not what you normally encounter with military officers or NCOs. You don't hear that kind of talking, that kind of tone of voice.